जगत्पते गोपेशा गोपिककंद श्रीराधाकंद नमोस्तुते जायतम सुरथाव फंगोर मम मंद मथुरगति मत्सर्वश्वापदं बोझाव राधा मदन मोहनाव दिव्याद बृंदरण्य कल्पद्रुमधा श्रीमान रत्नागर सिंहासनस्थाओ श्री श्री राधा शील गोविंद देवाओ पृष्ठाल विषेव्य मनोस्मरामी श्रीमान राष्ट्र सारंभे वंशीभात तथाश्रिता खर्षान वेणु स्वनायर गोप्य गोपीनाथ श्रीयेस्तुन सप्त खंसन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानु सुथे देवी प्राणमामी हरि प्रिय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शुभाश्री गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे These verses from the Chaitanya Charitamrita by Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami are giving us, through his divine eyes, a vision of the spiritual world, Sri Vrindavan Dham. Vrindavan is that place beyond the earthly pleasures that we are all aspiring to achieve, beyond the heavenly pleasures which the most pious of all men attain, beyond the Brahma Jyoti, the state of mukti, in which the jnanis and the impersonalists perform lifetimes of sacrifice to enter into. Beyond even the planets of Vaikuntha, where Lord Narayan, the Supreme Godhead, is eternally reciprocating love with his eternal servants. Sri Vrindavan Dham is that place which is unique in all spiritual realizations. And if one very carefully studies the science of theology and comparatively analyzes the teachings and the realizations of all the great religions of the world, we will find that the atmosphere of love that is revealed by the Supreme Godhead in the land of Goloka, Sri Vrindavan Dham, is all-inclusive and is the essence of sweetness in its most sublime personification of the exchanges between the Supreme Godhead and his eternal parts. When Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in Sri Rangam having a discussion with Venkata Bhatt, who was a very, very great devotee of the Lord, he explained to him what is the special feature that is unique only in the abode of Sri Krishna. And that is that Vrindavaneshwari, Sri Radharani, the goddess, the queen of Vrindavan, she provides an intimacy with Godhead that is incomparable in any other realization of the Absolute Truth. You see, in Vaikuntha, the abode of Narayana, in which the ecstasy of that realization is millions and billions of times greater than the pleasure achieved by mukti. When we are frustrated due to the temporary nature of this world, dukkhalayam ashashvatam, we try to escape the miseries by escaping the repetition of birth and death. In this way, people strive to merge into an impersonal conception. Because after all, they are thinking that due to personality, due to the variegated conditions of this world, which are always temporary, we have to suffer. So if we can somehow or other free ourselves from the bondage of dualities, give up all sense of personal identity, then there's no one and nothing to suffer anymore. Therefore, the monists who strive for this conception of realization of the Absolute Truth are striving for the negation of suffering, which after all is greatly blissful compared to the repetition of birth and death. To make a gross comparison, sometimes when people are very miserable in this world and everything's going wrong for them, they just want to go to sleep. They take so many sleeping pills so that they can just go to sleep, and in that state, they forget their problems. And if you forget your problems, as far as you're concerned, at least for the time being, you have no problems. So the state of impersonal realization of the Absolute Truth is going to sleep through all the problems of this world. Sripad Shankaracharya, the Buddhistic conception of the Absolute Truth, is in this way. Lord Buddha taught that this is a world of duality, pleasure, pain, honor, dishonor, happiness, distress, heat, cold. And therefore, sometimes there's pleasures and sometimes there's pain. To the degree you become attached to pleasure, to that degree you have to suffer when it's taken away, and it will be taken away, so why are you wasting your precious time? Through the various processes of meditation, concentration, very high standard of morality and piety, study of his teachings, you can go beyond the external conditions of this finite world and enter into a realm of eternity. In that realm of eternity, there's no suffering because all suffering is due to temporary nature of the conditions of this world. Dukkhalayam ashashvatam, Krishna says that this world is miserable because everything is temporary and we are longing for something eternal. We never want the pleasures to end. So therefore, this state of nirvana is the negation of all those principles which call us suffering. And it is a blissful state, no doubt. It is a state where you're consciously unconscious of the relative world. And Sripad Shankaracharya, but Buddha gave no name to this condition of nirvana. He just described it as a state of peace, a state of utter emptiness of desires and longings. Shankaracharya defined that same nirvana but explained that this nirvana, this state of complete abstention from any longings in this world, is Brahman. It's God. The impersonal aspect of God. Can you understand the difference? It's the same realization, the same consciousness, the same liberated state. One simply defines it as a liberated state, and one defines it as God, Brahman. But in this state, kaivalya narakayate, there is no facility for loving reciprocation. And the soul in everyone's heart is by nature active, pleasure-seeking. However long you fall asleep, unless you're dead, eventually you must wake up. Sometimes that's the worst part of the day for people, to wake up in the morning. In fact, for many people, there's such a pleasure and an ecstasy in sleeping. You don't have to worry about anything. You don't have to worry about what people are saying about you. You don't have to worry about what people are doing to you. You don't have to worry about your bills, about your job, about your studies. You're free. You're liberated. You're asleep. And then when you wake up in the morning, you have to face the world. You have to face your duties, your responsibilities, your problems. You just want to go on in the pleasure of sleeping. How many of you, when you have to get up in the morning, it's such an austerity because sleeping is such a pleasure? You have all felt that? There is one honest young lady in this audience. So in this way, sleep is a very blissful condition for one who is suffering, for one who is unfulfilled, ungratified in his life. But you cannot sleep forever, because the nature of the consciousness within us is to seek out positive satisfaction through loving relationships, which is a stronger burning in our lives, to go to sleep or to find love, to empty ourselves of those things which are causing us pain, or to fill ourselves with the thought of someone that we intimately and intensely love. Therefore, millions of times, according to the great acharyas, higher than that state of mukti is pure bhakti. Pure bhakti means that state of divine love, transcending all the temporary conditions of this world, detaching ourselves from the bondage of our passions, and completely immersing our consciousness, merging our consciousness in the loving service of Krishna, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Everyone wants an eternal, unlimited lover. But in this world, there is no such thing as an eternal, unlimited lover. But Narayan is that supreme, eternal, unlimited lover. And to be the servant, eternally immersed in that service, is a bliss, is a state of loving consciousness that absolutely cannot be imagined or comprehended with our limited brains of this world. It is the constitutional position of the soul. And this is this place which is called Vaikuntha. where everyone is immersed for all of eternity in the loving service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But there is a state categorically more inclusive than Vaikuntha. Because in Vaikuntha we can become the servant of the Lord, not I. But in the land, the spiritual abode of Ayodhya, Lord Sri Ram, you could also take the position of the Lord's friend and even the Lord's parent. That is why it is said that 1,000 names of Vishnu is equal to one name of Ram. But the freedom, the absolute freedom of loving reciprocation with Godhead finds its culmination in Vrindavan Dham. Because in Ayodhya and in Vaikuntha, everyone is conscious that Narayan and Ram is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But in Vrindavan Dham, there is no resident that in any way conceives of Krishna as God. Why? Because such a conception interferes with the freedom and intimacy of their love. The cowherd boys simply see Krishna as their best friend. If they saw him as God, they would not be playing with him. They would be serving him. Now, even in this world, can you have a more intimate relationship with your servant or your friend? This is called Sakyaras. But deeper, more inclusive than that friendly rasa, is that of a parent. The intimacy of all the elderly gopis and gopas were in a mood that Krishna was their son. Krishna was their child. They cared for him. They fed him. They worried about him. It is described that after Krishna killed the great demoness Putana, who was a very, very gigantic Rakshasi, Kethari witch, Mother Yashoda was thinking, it must be due to the pious activities of the Brajabasis that God is so kind that he protected our child. And then she began to perform many, many rituals to protect him. She started chanting mantras over every part of his body, touching him with the yak tail, touching him with kushi grass, touching him and with cow urine and cow dung, trying to make everything auspicious so that demons could no longer hurt him. And a little later, when Trinavarta came to kill Krishna, he took Krishna high into the sky, and Mother Yashoda was simply, what will happen to my son? She couldn't find him anywhere in the dust. She fainted like a cow that had just lost her calf. She had the intensity of a mother's love for a child. But because that child was Krishna, the love was infinitely sweeter, deeper, and more intense than we could love any child in this world. In fact, at one time, Mother Yashoda, she was told that Krishna had eaten dirt. And she worried about him, like a mother would worry for her child. That Krishna, you have eaten dirt, you will become sick. Please, Krishna, never eat dirt again. Krishna said, I never ate dirt. And Balaram said, no, he ate dirt. And Balaram and his friends were accusing that Krishna ate dirt. And Krishna and his friends were saying, no, he's lying. I never ate dirt. See, even in the spiritual world, brothers deal with each other like this, trying to get each other in trouble with the parents. The reason why our children do it in this world is because Krishna and Balaram do it in that world. But of course, in the spiritual world, it is only for the sake of increasing the pleasure of their lila. So Mother Yashoda said, Krishna, if you want to prove to me that you have not eaten dirt, then kindly open your mouth. She was so much concerned with her child's welfare. And when Krishna opened her mouth and she looked within it, she saw the most wondrous of all sights. She saw the entire cosmic manifestation, all the universes, all the planets, all the oceans, all the mountains, all the rivers, all the demigods, all living beings. She saw everything within the mouth of Krishna. And then she realized that this is not my son. This is God. This is the Father of all living beings. This is the absolute truth in whom everything is contained. My dear Lord, please forgive me. I've spanked you. I've scolded you. I've had such ego to think that you're depending on me. This is craziness. Now I understand who you really are. And with such awe and reverence and folded palms, she began to offer prayers. You are the absolute truth. You are the controller of all controllers. You are the ultimate realization of all the yogis and jnanis and bhaktas. But Krishna was not pleased to see her in this condition. Why? Because her knowing that Krishna was God interfered with their relationship as a mother and child. So at that time, Krishna closed his beautiful lotus-like mouth and he smiled at his mother. And when he smiled at his mother, his childlike beauty captivated her heart. And her breast just began to flow with milk due to motherly affection. And in this motherly love, it was like an ocean that completely drowned all remembrance of what she had just seen. And she put Krishna in her arms, embraced him, gave her the milk from her body, and said, oh, my dear child, you must be hungry. If I do not feed you, you will die. This is Vrindavan. But the highest, the most inclusive of all the relationships or rasas in Vrindavan is that of Madhurya Ras, the conjugal love of the gopis for Sri Krishna. They did not care whether he was God or not God. They simply loved him because he was Krishna. It is described that the gopis' love for Krishna was under a spell of total infatuation. But unlike the love affairs of this world, there is not even the slightest tinge of desire for one's own sense gratification. They love Krishna simply to give pleasure to Krishna. And because Krishna is infinite, their love for him was infinite. Because Krishna is ever expanding and ever increasing in every way, their love for him was ever expanding and ever increasing in every way. the greatest misconception is to in any way, shape, or form compare the love between the gopis and Sri Krishna to the love affairs of this world. Because we are dealing with spirit souls in their ultimately perfected condition of consciousness. They do not have material bodies, but pure spiritual bodies. And for the pleasure of Krishna, they are loving him in this most spontaneous of all forms of love. And it is described that actually in Goloka Vrindavan there are three neighborhoods. There is Mathura, there is Dwaraka, and there is Vrindavan. They are all on the supreme planet of Goloka. In Dwaraka, Krishna is worshipped in Swakiya Ras by the queens. But in Vrindavan, he is worshipped in Parakiya Ras. And according to the great acharyas, this Parakiya Ras must be understood very, very, very carefully under the guidance of very learned and realized souls. Otherwise, we are bound to commit offenses in our mind. In fact, the conjugal love affairs of Radha and Krishna and the gopis are so grossly misunderstood by the common man. Although Krishna descended along with the abode of Vrindavan into this world just to attract us to these wonderful pastimes, people in Kali Yuga gradually became so misinformed, taking it so cheaply, that Krishna appeared again to reveal the conjugal love between Radha and Krishna, but in the form of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Lord Chaitanya is Krishna, who wanted to taste the sweetness of the conjugal love of Radha. But he did it in such a way that he was a sannyasi. And with the heart of Radha's love, he was manifesting to the world her love for Krishna. But nobody could misunderstand it in this form, because he lived such a strict life. So therefore, the great acharyas explain that there is no greater and better way of understanding what is Radha and Krishna's leela, what is the leela of the gopis and Krishna, no greater way than through the life and the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because if we try to understand it through any other means, we are very susceptible to committing the offense of misunderstanding and having some tinge of a feeling that this is like the illicit affairs of the people of this world. It is a pure spiritual expression of loving exchange, of utter giving. Krishna is simply giving 100% of himself for the pleasure of each of his gopis, and the gopis are giving 100% of themselves for the pleasure of Krishna. Although it appeared to be expressed through the activities of spiritual bodies, in essence, these expressions were simply manifestations of the deepest love of the pure heart of the Jivatma. And of course, it is on this night, this most holy and auspicious evening of Sharad Purnima, that Krishna, upon seeing the beautiful moon rising in the horizon. The moon that night had a beautiful reddish golden hue. It was the most beautiful moon of all moons. Why is this? Because it is explained that Krishna wanted to satisfy his devotees with this highest of all relationships. And therefore, he himself felt a very deep, deep desire to enjoy the love of his gopis. So the moon, who is the founder of the dynasty of Sri Krishna, Krishna was born in the lunar dynasty, was very anxious to assist the Lord by creating the most incredibly beautiful atmosphere that anyone has ever seen. The whole sky was simply emanating with the beautiful color of the effulgent moon, Sharad Purnima. And at that time, Krishna, on the bank of the river Jamuna, under the holy Bamsiva tree, he played the fifth note of his flute. And when the sound of that beautiful song filled the air of Vrindavan, everything and everyone became surcharged with ecstatic love. And when that sound vibration entered into the ears of the gopis, the damsels of Brajadham, they became so much captivated that there was nothing or no one else that could divert their attention from meeting with Krishna. It is described that some of the young girls were unmarried, and those girls, immediately leaving whatever duties they had, ran to meet with Krishna. And some were married and had so many family responsibilities. Some were milking cows, and they left the cows without even considering what stage of milking process was at hand. Some of them were cooking milk, leaving the milk on the stove. They went for Krishna. Some of them were breastfeeding their baby children. And they put their children down to meet with Krishna. Some of them were serving personally their husbands, their fathers, their father-in-laws, their brothers. Immediately, without even consideration of what they would think, they ran for Krishna. The gopis of Vrindavan exhibited complete renunciation. They are the supreme embodiments of Vairagya. For the pleasure and the service of Krishna, they were willing to detach themselves from those forms of love that are most difficult to ever forget in this world. The security of their nice homes they left behind, each one of them went alone into the forest filled with wild animals. It was very, very dangerous predicament for a young woman who was chaste and protected throughout her life. They knew that they would never be welcome home again. In fact, it is explained by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur that their husbands, their in-laws, those who were unmarried, their fathers, their brothers, they stood oftentimes with sticks in their hands and said, "You cannot go anywhere tonight. You must stay home. And yet somehow or other they got by them, knowing that now I'm in such a shameful condition, I'll never be able to return. They even renounced the most sacred of all possessions for a woman, their chastity, their social image was completely destroyed for the pleasure of Krishna. And it is described that some of them, by the arrangement of Yogamaya, were forcibly locked in rooms so that they could not escape. And those gopis, with such longing, with such intense feeling, they could do nothing but meditate in the core of their heart on meeting with Krishna and giving pleasure to Krishna. It is described that there are different categories of gopis. Some were nitya siddhas. They descended from the spiritual world of Goloka in order to simply assist the Lord in his loving pastimes. Those gopis, with no problem, they went to meet Krishna. But there were others. It is described in the Shastras that the personified Vedas, they long to have such an intimate relationship with Krishna. So they, as sadhan siddhas, allowed to take birth in Vrindavan to completely purify themselves in the association of the other gopis. And there were also a group of sages in Dandakaranya forest who met Lord Ram. And when they met Sita and Ram, although they were quiet due to their great humility, they were all longing to have a loving relationship with Ram. But because in that incarnation, Sri Ram would only have such a relationship with one person, that is Sita, he gave them the benediction that they could take rebirth when he comes again as the gopis and enjoy this relationship. But some of them, although they were pure devotees of the Lord, they still were not to the level of complete purification of the other gopis. Those gopis were not allowed to see Krishna that night. They were locked in rooms. And it is explained the intensity of the separation. They were on the verge of death. They could not understand how they were living. It was such a burning fire of longing to be with Krishna. The meditation of Krishna in their heart was so overwhelming that night all of the gopis completely burned to ashes through this meditation any tinge of material contamination that may have been in their hearts. Any tinge of any form of impurity. And thus, they were allowed to enter in to the realm of the Nitya Siddha, the higher level of the gopi's love. And when they went to meet with Sri Krishna, Lord Sri Krishna wanted to test them. He said, "My dear gopis, why have you come in the middle of the night? It is not appropriate for chaste young ladies like you to leave your fathers, your brothers, your husbands, to meet another man in the forest. And besides that, it's very dangerous. There's no security here. It's very dark. You should go home." And upon hearing this, the gopis posed so many heartfelt arguments. One of those arguments was that, Krishna, you are in everyone's heart. You are the source of life for every living being. If you leave a person's heart, all that's left is a dead corpse, and no one loves dead corpses. They put them in fire or bury them underground. In truth, my dear Lord, it is your presence within a person's heart that makes them lovable. And that is a fact. Because Krishna is in the heart of your child, you love your child. It's actually Krishna in their heart that you love. Because Krishna is in the heart of your mother and your father, you love them. It's actually Krishna that you love. In a romantic relationship, or in a relationship of husband and wife, the intensity of that love is that they are both loving the Krishna within themselves. Because Krishna is all attractive. And because we are all part of Krishna, it is that attractive quality of Krishna that attracts people to us. So the gopis explained, factually, the only person we ever loved was you. The only person anyone could possibly love is you. But unfortunately, because we do not understand Krishna in truth, our love is steeped in ignorance, and therefore we don't taste the sweetness of transcendental ecstasy in our loving relationships in this world. But factually, if you learn how to love Krishna, then you'll have loving relationships with everybody in this world on one level or another, according to how they approach you. Because you'll see and reciprocate with the Krishna in their hearts. This is love. It's simply a matter of being conscious of the truth. The gopis were perfectly self-realized souls. So they told Krishna, like, by loving you, by watering the root of the tree, everyone and everything will be nourished. So we should stay right here and satisfy you tonight. And Krishna was so happy to hear these words of love that he began to dance with the gopis. And that is how the rasa dance has begun. Note how Krishna put them through a test. He puts all of his devotees through tests. Before Krishna reveals himself to you, he'll offer you everything and anything else. And if you're attracted to any of it, Krishna will just let you be content with that. When a baby cries, the mother tries to occupy its mind with something. Sometimes giving it something to play with. And if they become amused by that, the mother goes on with her business. But if the child just throws it down and says, I don't want this, I want you, and the mother may put one of those, what do you call it? They look, I've never been married, but I've seen sometimes mothers, they look kind of like what I would put in a drain to stop it. Pacifiers or something, I don't know. Anyway, they put one of those in the mouth. And if the child's happy with that, thinking, ah, very nice, then the mother goes on with her business. But if the child rips it out of his mouth, throws it on the ground and cries more than ever, then the mother gives a bottle of milk. Ah, very nice, now I have my milk. Mother goes on with her business. But if the child throws the milk on the ground and cries louder than ever, then the mother knows that this child will not be content with anything or anyone except me. Then the mother picks up the child with great love and gives that child herself. So in Krishna consciousness, Krishna will do the same thing. It is interesting to know that at the time of the Ras Lila, Lord Sri Krishna, Shamsundar, was only 8 years old. And at the age of 8 years old, you must understand that such a conjugal relationship was, even from the material point of view, in perfect innocence. There can be no lust in an eight-year-old. You're not old enough to be like that. So from the material and spiritual point of view, it was a perfectly pure exchange of love. And of course, many of you here are brahmacharis, sannyasis. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained that those in the renounced order, they should follow in the footsteps of the gopis and simply be with Krishna. Put everything else aside. But most of you here tonight are married men and women. You have responsibilities in this world. In this case, the Ras Lila is also very instructive. Because although in spirit, the gopis of Vrajadham put aside all material attachments simply for the pleasure of Krishna, after they danced, they went back to their homes and performed all their responsibilities and loved their children, if they had children, loved their husbands, loved their parents, because they could feel and experience Krishna in their hearts. But first and foremost in our life, is we must make Krishna the center. Whatever our activities in this world may be, they are perfect if we put Krishna in the center. That means Krishna's service is the unifying factor of all of our relationships. The perfect marriage is when the husband and the wife simply exist together for the pleasure and the loving service of Krishna. If they do this, they will have perfect respect for one another, perfect compassion and sympathy for one another, because they won't see each other as objects of enjoyment. A man should see his wife as the sacred property of God. And for a man to misuse his wife in any way, shape, or form, or even exploit that wife for his own desires, is an offense to God. It is his property, not yours. Therefore, Krishna conscious marriage means the utmost respect, and vice versa. The woman sees that the man is the representative of God. He's the sacred property of God. At the time of wedding, what happens? You make a vow before God to have this respect, this love, and this God-conscious unity amongst each other. Therefore, the wife should see the husband in this light. And he's not here for me to boss around, to tell what to do. to use for my own purposes. We are simply a partnership together to love and respect and honor one another for Krishna's service. And that marriage is perfect marriage. The gopis teach the householders perfect household life. And the gopis also teach sannyasis perfect sannyas life. The Ras Lila of Lord Sri Krishna, if it is understood according to our level of consciousness, according to the teachings of the great saints, there is great, great, great knowledge, information that we can apply to our practical day of life. Krishna's pastimes are not simply meant to entertain us. They are meant to be understood for our purification. That is why Srila Prabhupada and all of the great acharyas in our sampradaya, any time they translate or the Vedic literatures, they always give a commentary. Because without that commentary, you have no access to understand what's being said. Just like some time ago, the Mahabharata, the Ramayana, was playing on the television. And it was very nice. The nicest part of it was giving people a connection to Ram and to Krishna. People were giving more prominence to them in their lives. But simply by seeing the stories, we are very much entertained and we may grasp certain moral principles. But as far as purification, unless there is the purport, the explanation of the great saints, the great acharyas, it is minimal. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada explained that his purports were thousands of times more important than the translations. Because they give us access to the translations. They give us a way to apply these teachings to our life for our purification. Today, there are so many people who recite Bhagavat, who recite Ramayana, or people who paint beautiful pictures of Krishna's Leela. But what really does it mean to us? Here we see Krishna throwing the dyes on the gopis, celebrating Holi. Here on this wall we see him stealing the butter and the dahi from the Braja gopis. Here we see him performing the beautiful Jhulan Yatra with Sri Radharani. And it gives us a real feeling that, this is Indian culture, this is Hindu culture, and this is where my birth and my heritage is coming from, and I'm proud, this is Krishna. I remember the first time I flew on Air India. It was in about 1979. And on each airplane, over each seat, was a painting in the wall of Ras Lila, Krishna dancing with gopis. And I was thinking, my God, this is wonderful. An airline that has Ras Lila going on over each seat. So he said, they just see it as art. They just see it as part of their Hindu heritage. Do any of them understand what the Ras Lila is? Unless they hear from Prabhupada or a similar great acharya, it's almost meaningless to them. So this is the importance of associating with devotees. By coming to the temple of the Lord, by reading the books of the spiritual master, by associating with sadhus who really are trying to follow in the footsteps of the previous acharyas, they give us a practical understanding of what Krishna's lila means to us, what it means to our life, how to purify our consciousness in such a way that we can not just be entertained by these pastimes, but we can be purified and ultimately we can actually enter into these loving pastimes. And how is this done? By learning how to engage in the process of devotional service. If you hear properly the beautiful stories of Krishna's lila, you will be inspired to surrender to Krishna. You will be inspired to do something for the pleasure of Krishna and his devotees. If that's not there, then you're not hearing properly, or it's not being presented properly. We are not meant to enjoy, we are meant to be enjoyed. Enjoyed by Krishna. And that is the meaning of Ras Lila evening, Sharad Purnima. The night when everyone simply gives up all their ego, all their attachments, for the purpose of being enjoyed by Krishna. And we are also fortunate, because the temple of the Lord is none different than Vrindavan itself. You are all now seated in the highest realm of the spiritual world, the abode of Krishna and Radha. Sri Sri Radha Gopinath's Vrindavan. We even have one waterfall. It's actually, there is Jamuna water. So the Jamuna is here. And you'll see, the cows are here. And the forest is here. Ah. Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda taught us the greatest, most sublime way of giving pleasure to Krishna. Not only have they taught us, but within a few moments we will witness how they are practically demonstrating to us how to be enjoyed by Krishna. Lord Chaitanya, who is Krishna himself, appeared in the guise of a devotee to teach us how to love, how to give pleasure, how to be enjoyed by God. And the most simple, sublime of all processes, which is the foundation in which we can build our devotion, our love, is the chanting of the holy name. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. But we should chant in this spirit. With this chanting, we should be conscious that this is an offering of our hearts, an offering of our love, an offering of our life for the pleasure of Krishna. In this way, somehow or other, whatever our state of awareness, whatever our conditioning is, some inconceivable will of the Lord that tonight we are all being allowed to be part of the Rasa Lila. It's a fact. Krishna is celebrating his Rasa Lila in the form of Radha Gopinath, the Lord of the Gopis. What better murti is there to be an association with on this night than the Lord of the Gopis? And he is enjoying with Sri Radharani, and he is allowing all of us to assist in this enjoyment by chanting their glories, by dancing for them, by showing our love. So let us all really, 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 seriously and deeply ponder upon the good fortune we have and take full advantage of it. This night is the supreme night of Krishna's
reciprocating pleasure with his devotees. So according to our little tiny capacity, let us give it all of our concentration, all of our awareness, all of our prayer, and chanting the holy name for the pleasure of Krishna. I thank you very much.